time again, folks. The madness almost upon us. Well, like I said, technically started in earnest last night with the beginnings of the first four. Continues tonight with the second half of the first four. And then really, wall-to-wall basketball first round of the NCAA tournament begins Thursday, begins tomorrow. And that's why we're trying to help you out. Saw some numbers, like it was 40% of Illinoisans, or close to 40% of Illinoisans, are going to be filling out a bracket. 73% of people said they're going to watch the tournament even if they haven't filled out a bracket. So we're here to try to help you best we can. Like I said, you can take my advice and throw it in the trash and do the exact opposite. You may do just as well by doing that. But nonetheless, I've been doing this since, God, almost, oh, I hate to admit it, probably going on 40 years. Started when I was like 6 or 7. My dad let me start filling out brackets, which, you know, you can judge if you'd like, but I've continued to do so. It's something I've looked forward to each and every year. And so we'll go through the South region now of the NCAA tournament. Thus far, if you've been following along, on Monday, we covered the East. That's where the Fighting Illini are. I did not have them making the Final Four, although I would not be surprised. They're playing really well right now, but I have defending champion UConn coming out of the East. Yesterday, we broke down the West, and I have Arizona coming out of the West. The South is a difficult one because, as I mentioned before the break, the number one seed, the Houston Cougars, which have been really good all year long, got waxed in the Big 12 title game, losing by 28 to Iowa State. Houston plays really good defense. Their offense is suspect at times. The number two seed in the South is Marquette, who don't have their best player right now. He was hurt in the conference tournament. Now, he may or may not be coming back. Tyler Kolick's his name. He's a point guard. And without him, still good, but not great. Then you look at Kentucky, who have all the talent in the world but play zero defense. And then the four seed is Duke, which has been okay, but people are wanting more. So let's break it down and see how I have it all playing out. We begin with that number one seed, the Houston Cougars. They take on Longwood. I don't think they're going to be a number one seed that's going to be upset. I know we've seen that more recently than we ever have before. In fact, for the first time ever, a few years ago, and then last year, Purdue getting beat by Farley Dickinson. I don't see that happening to Houston. I think they get by Longwood. Up next, you got Nebraska and Texas A&M. That one really is a pick'em. That's a coin toss. Nebraska's played really well. Fred Hoiberg's a good coach, but Buzz Williams is a really good coach from Texas A&M. They got two really good guards in Wade Taylor and Boo Radford. They also, interesting fact about Texas A&M, they get an offensive rebounding clip of 42%, which means for every 10 shots they miss, they get four of them back. So a lot of second chance opportunities. I go Texas A&M. I wouldn't fault you for taking Nebraska since we're in the heart of Big Ten country. Interesting about that matchup as well is former Nebraska AD Trev Alberts is now the new AD for Texas A&M. So be difficult watch for him, I'm sure. But I'm going to take the Aggies in that one, which sets up a really interesting second round match we'll get to here momentarily. Here's my upset special, 12-5 upset. It's ripe, usually always happens. I understand Wisconsin has played much better as of late. They made that deep run into the Big Ten tournament championship game before losing to Illinois. But they take on James Madison, a team that's like 31-3, and James Madison beat Michigan State at Michigan State early on in the season. They're tested. I'm going to take James Madison in an upset there. Then we can move on to Duke, the four seed versus Vermont. I will take Duke. Going down to the bottom half of the bracket, six-seeded Texas Tech, which has had a really good season thus far. They take on the 11-seed NC State, who made a Cinderella run through the ACC tournament. I feel that NC State continues to stay hot. I'll take that 11-6 upset right there. Then you got Florida, who lost in the SEC title game, also lost one of their front court players to a horrific fractured leg in that game. It was awful to watch. They'll take on the winner of tonight's Boise State Colorado game. If Colorado wins, I'm still going to stick with Florida, but I can see Colorado giving them more of a headache than Boise State would. And then we have Marquette versus Western Kentucky, the Hilltoppers. I will take Marquette even without Tyler Kolek. Moving on to second-round matchups then, as far as my bracket goes. Houston versus Texas A&M. They played earlier this year. Houston won by just 4. This one is a real tough one for me because my wife is a Texas A&M fan. My father-in-law went to Texas A&M, but I tried to take that out of the equation. I think it's going to be a hell of a game if it happens because I'm hedging my bets a little bit with the Nebraska thing. I will take Houston, but not with a lot of confidence. Then you look at James Madison and Duke. James Madison has had a great year, but I think Duke just has too much raw talent. I think Duke wins that one. Then looking at NC State versus Kentucky, I like Kentucky to put an end to NC State's Cinderella run. Then you have Florida and Marquette. I'm going to take Marquette. I think Marquette, even without a healthy Tyler Kolek, can get by Florida. So then you're looking at the Sweet 16 matchup. I have Houston and I have Duke. And I, over the years, I've made it well known, I am no fan of Duke. Christian Laettner still to this day is the bane of my existence. We have a friend who is a huge Duke fan, and it pains me to choose this, but Houston is the one seed that I have the least amount of faith in. They give me the feelings of Virginia a few years ago. Even though Virginia lost to a 16, they were the first number one seed to ever lose to a 16. They came back and won the entire thing the next year. Houston's good, but I think Duke has just enough to get by Houston. I just don't have a ton of faith in them as the number one seed. So I'll take Duke. Then we got Kentucky and Marquette. If Calipari, John Calipari can get his guys motivated to play a lick of defense, there is so much NBA-level talent on the Kentucky Wildcats. I'm going to take Kentucky over Marquette in that matchup. If Tyler Kolek is back in 100%, that changes things up a little bit, but I'll still take Kentucky, which means then I have Duke and Kentucky. Man, the NCAA would love that to be the Elite Eight game, right? To see Duke go up against Kentucky, two traditional powers going at it. I will take Kentucky to make it to the Final Four. I know that that's put a lot of faith in a team that really hasn't shown you they can play any defense at all thus far. But give me Kentucky to advance from the South region. To me, that is the toughest one to choose because there's no school that wows you in that particular region. Hi, you're on WMAY.
Hey, morning, Mike. I'm not a fan of NCAA basketball. I'm not going to claim to know anything about it.
You'll probably win the bracket then. Most of the time, it's a person.
I filled one out, you know, a couple times in high school type thing, but I would love for you to break down how in the hell, you know, they split these teams up where you have a West Virginia is in the West Division or whatever. That it just boggles the mind on how they break these teams up into their divisions and that.
Well, they seed them and then they have to, you know, send them to different places. They're not as worried about travel. They do a better job now with a pod system. It used to be a little bit more difficult where everything was all at one place. Now they try to keep them to, at least in the first couple of rounds, and not have to travel too far if they can help it. But they have like a paint-by-numbers thing, and it's interesting that a team like BYU can't play on certain days because it's a Mormon institution. So, like, they have to be seated somewhere where they play Thursday, Saturday games. They can't play Friday, Sunday because they can't play on Sunday. It's really kind of odd.
Wow. It seems like everything with the way they choose the seeds and everything is, for the outsider looking in, it's very convoluted.
It is. I've been doing it for 40 years, and I still watch the selection show sometimes, and I am befuddled, and I have no idea. I'm like, I don't know what they're doing in that room. Maybe it's in a state where marijuana is legalized, and that's what they're doing in that room.
Or mushrooms.
Right, exactly. One of those two. So, yeah, sometimes there's no rhyme or reason, but they come up with it each and every year, and we attempt to try to understand it best we can. It is Mike Whitmacher with you here on WMAY on this Wednesday, March 20th. Always very appreciative of you finding time to join us. You're Oasis in the Desert of Politics. The palate cleanser, sorbet of radio, as it were. At least why I'm captaining the ship during this time slot. Who knows how long that may be? We shall see. 217-629-7970 is the phone number. Very difficult for me. I went without caffeine this morning, so bear with me. We're starting to hit that wall. So maybe during the 8 o'clock hour, I'm going to have to find a quick injection of caffeine to carry me through. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, by the way, we do have an interesting study as it pertains to the work week. What people think about the Monday through Friday grind, and also the way in which they get paid for that grind. So we'll get into that discussion. Also, apparently an inordinate amount of people concerned about their body odor, which we will discuss in the 8 o'clock hour as well. But before we get to all of that, do you use the closed captioning on your TV, even though you don't need to use it? I ask because if you have littles, you should be using it. Now, my wife will use closed captioning for certain shows when she's trying to intensely kind of follow what is going on. Like, we have surround sound in our home, right? But there is something about sometimes there's certain ways different characters deliver lines that at times you're like, huh, what do they say? And then you start fixating on that. And the next thing you know, the scene progresses and you're still fixating on the one piece of dialogue that you didn't hear. And so you lose the context of the rest of the scene. Whereas when the closed captioning is on, you can read exactly what they're saying. Now, the problem sometimes is that if the closed captioning's on, you're paying more attention to that than the action that's going on the screen. And according to research, though, if you have littles in the house, you should definitely have the closed captioning on. Researchers found that children aged 4 to 7 are twice as likely to become better readers if they watch TV with the subtitles turned on. They say popular cartoons like Peppa Pig and Bluey even contain a high number of high-frequency words that can help your child get ahead with their reading. The experts note that subtitles cannot easily be ignored while they're on the screen. And that is the truth. I will happen upon the television sometimes after my wife has watched a show and the subtitles are still on. And depending on what I am watching, I'm either okay with them continuing to being on the TV or it bugs me. Like if it's a sporting event where I don't really need to get into the ins and outs of the commentary, it's there and I'm glad that we have it because it's something I do as well. Been doing 17 seasons of Glenwood football, so, and I used to do basketball as well of play-by-play, and I know the importance of it, especially in the radio sense, but on TV also important. But it clutters the screen if you have the closed captioning on along with it. And so I will have to turn that off. But what they're saying is, if you have young kids, it's important. They say one landmark study conducted by researchers from the university over in the UK found that both children and adults exhibit automatic reading behavior. So if the closed captioning is on, everybody tends to gravitate towards it. Hi, you're on WMAY.
Yeah, it gets turned on at my house, and it irritates me.
Okay.
I don't want to, if I'm watching a show, I want to take in all the visual aspects of the show. And if I have to keep glancing down and reading as I go, it irritates me. My kids will leave it on and, you know, it just, my wife will use it every once in a while, especially like when she's watching like a baking show.
Okay.
Like, really?
Yeah.
Let's watch it. Spin the batter. No, you don't have to read about the batter spinning.
Right.
You know?
And you can find that recipe on their website. You don't have to. You don't have to write it down right there.
And it just irritates me, I guess. And when we're watching, when the kids are over and we're watching something as a group, there's about a 50-50 chance one of them's going to turn it on.
Oh.
And I was like, all right, I guess I'm outvoted. But
I feel you.
It's because a democracy, but I feel I have 10 votes and they right. each have one. So I think I outvote them.
Yes, I don't think you're wrong in that. You know what? You should advocate for more vote count for you. I don't think you're wrong there, sir. Appreciate the phone call. 217-629-7970. Hi, you're on WMAY.
We keep it on all the time.
Is it?
But it started.
Okay, go ahead.
It started when our kids wanted to learn the words to Disney songs in movies.
Oh, well, oh, interesting. I never thought of it that way, of figuring out the exact lyric instead of singing, "There's a bathroom on the right."
Exactly. So they, like, Into the Woods, they watched it with the
closed caption
on, so they could learn all the words to all the songs.
Interesting. I never thought of it that way. Now I feel like there's no excuse for ever singing the wrong lyric, because just closed caption it and figure the damn thing out.
Right. But it's always on in our house, always.
All right. Appreciate the phone call. Thank you, Carrie. 217-629-7970. Yeah, I don't have as much annoyance as I used to with it. I understand what my wife is trying to do, but to the first caller's point, and to the study's point, we immediately gravitate to it. And at times it can take me out of the program I'm watching, because I'm more concerned with reading all the subtitles than I am taking in the visuals that are accompanying it. So, I mean, it's a personal preference thing, and there are sometimes, right, there's very high-pressure, high-tense situations in TV where there may be a bit of a whisper, and you really want to know what's going on in that dialogue. I understand it. I understand people's want, and that's a great point by Carrie there, by calling in, that learning the exact words to songs. They went on to say that, you know, that the fact we have automatic reading behavior means whatever subtitles are playing on the screen, anyone watching can't help but look at them and follow them. Since children are already following along with the subtitles, even if they can't read them yet, they build up the association between the sounds and the written words. And research suggests that this helps children develop reading skills faster than they otherwise would have, especially if they may not be reading much in print. And that's something that we don't do as much of as we used to. At least I'm guilty of it. My wife's much more of a reader than I am, which may be why she enjoys the closed captioning more than myself as well. Appreciate the phone calls.
The veterans and the people who really care about our... Oh, man, I'm having a cramp.
Oh, no.
Sorry, guys.
That's all right.
Oh, man. So, you know, we were talking about muscles that you didn't know you had. I just had one.
Uh-oh.
Oh, dude, that was live radio, baby.
That was. Wow. It is live radio, baby. Mike Wimaka with you here on WMAY on this Wednesday, March 20th. 217-629-7970. That is the phone number to take part in the conversation. There is a new study out of 2,000 employed Americans, and it shows that the feelings about the traditional way we go about our work week of Monday through Friday and getting paid once or twice a month, or, you know, once a week, just ain't for everyone. They say the Monday to Friday 9-to-5 work week, which has been the norm for nearly a century, no longer suits the needs of 57% of the survey respondents. That's a pretty darn high number. Almost 6 in 10 workers say this whole Monday to Friday 9-to-5 work week thing just ain't working for them anymore. And we've seen different countries and different companies kind of go to more of a 4-day work week and working maybe 4 10-hour days as opposed to 5 9-to-5 days. And what they've seen is that carrot of having that extra day off means people are working harder those 4 days. Now, I know what some will say, the opponents to the 4-day work week will come out and say, well, it's a slippery slope, right? If you show productivity is the same 4 10s as opposed to 5 8s, what does it say then maybe people's, you know, the 4-day work week becomes passe for them? And what does that do for operating hours? How do you stagger that? Then it comes a difficulty of schedule making and the like. So it's not something that's just going to happen overnight, but it's interesting to see that the number of respondents who are kind of saying that, yeah, that's kind of passe now, the way we've done it for so long, has gotten to a 60% clip of people saying 5 days a week, 9 to 5, just ain't for me. 67% believe that the traditional pay period of once or twice a month is extremely outdated. So that's almost 70% of respondents there. I could understand if you're only getting paid once a month, how that would be exceedingly difficult, especially with the way things are now with prices on things of trying to. And I understand, I'm sure, you know, later on today on these airwaves, later on tonight, Mr. Ramsey would be like, well, that's why you got to have a written budget. And I agree that a budget is necessary, but it becomes increasingly difficult as prices ebb and flows to only be paid once a month, even twice a month at that. So 51% say that a rigid structure is a thing of the past and that a lack of flexibility in the workplace is no longer acceptable. Now, when given the choice between more frequent pay or more flexible work schedule, working Americans are more likely to opt for a more frequent paycheck than they are the work schedule, 50% to 44%. Currently, 51% of respondents are paid every other week, 23% receive their paycheck weekly, 14% are paid monthly, and only 7% are paid daily or upon completion of their work. Interesting stuff so far. 217-629-7970 is the phone number. Hi, you're on WMAY.
I'd like to know the age of these people that they surveyed. If it's the younger group that's saying 4-day work week is bad, we're doomed. But if it's the older group that's saying 4-day work week is bad, you know, it's time for a change, I think we're okay. But here's a radical thought. I think if you work from the time you're out of college, say 22, 23, or the time you enter the workforce, say 20 years old, if you work from the time you're 20 to 50 and you're working 5-day work weeks, 40 to 50 hours a week, I think at that point you should get to go to a 4-day work week and only work 4 days a week. And then when you turn 55, you go down to a 3-day work week. When you go down to 60, you go down to a 2-day work week, and then you just ease right into retirement. What do you think of that?
That's even better than the thought I had at one point was my thought was you work until, you know, like you said, work, you enter at 20, you work until 45, you get a 1-year hiatus. You get to experience some retirement while you're still young enough, and then you come back to the workforce the next year. But I like your idea better. Yours is much more well thought out than my plan is.
Well, I like that idea of the 1-year hiatus, but add this into your thought process. What if we work 20 to 30, then you get a 1-year hiatus. 30 to 41, then you get a 1-year hiatus. 41 to 51, get a 1-year hiatus.
You know what?
51 to 60, and then retire.
I like what we're workshopping. We got to get together. We'll figure this all out, and I think we have a winning platform on our hands.
You'll have to throw your name in the hat to run for election, because I don't think they'd elect me.
There's a lot of tape on me saying dumb stuff over the years too, so we're gonna have to find a candidate to run for us.
We just need a puppet. That's
right?
All we need.
Exactly. Appreciate the phone call. I love that idea. 217-629-7970. Live workshopping of platforming right here on WMAY. It didn't give the age. It just said 2,000 employed Americans. And we've discussed before, right? When you have 2,000 isn't a tiny sample size, but remember the entirety of the workforce here in the U.S. And to take the 2,000 and to say that speaks for everybody is kind of a fool's errand, but it gives you at least a snapshot. And it does show, right, we've been doing this for 100 years and we've become accustomed to it. And sometimes change is good. But once again, like I said, it doesn't happen overnight. The survey also found that 62% of respondents feel their current pay cycle doesn't align with their financial situation, with most attributing this to living paycheck to paycheck or running out of money too quickly. Budgeting is important, right? 56% of employees always or often find themselves stretching their income between pay periods, with the average employee running out of funds just 12 days after receiving their paychecks. Now, that could be for a myriad of reasons as well, right? Part of it is the prices of things currently. Part of it may be not having a strong budget, but that is kind of alarming. An ideal scenario, employees would prefer to be paid either weekly or daily to better suit their current financial needs. Just to wrap it up, 35% of respondents admit they're unprepared for an unexpected $400 expense, and 59% believing they wouldn't be able to afford necessities if their pay were delayed by just 1 week. So a lot of eye-opening numbers within that particular study right there. Do I think a four-day work week change is imminent? I do not. Do I think it's something that's being tinkered with currently? Yes. Do I think the colonized plans are much better? Absolutely. It is Mike Wimacher with you here on WMAY.